Yes.
The most beautiful time, you want to plug that in?
Yeah.
When early morning, when the sun is up shining bright, and in the summer where everything was green, beautiful, or in the winter when everything was covered with snow, and I've never seen a more beautiful valley to come into. When you make that turn off out of Piles Canyon over to Union Junction and see the Grand Round Valley. So you coming down from Camila, you're in a canyon all the way, and you don't get to see the valley till you ride out in it.
How about working with the other men on the railroad? The section men were very important.
Oh yes.
Maintainers were very important. And what was your working relationship with these men?
Well, I didn't really have a working relationship with them. I didn't know them by name. I knew a lot of them by sight, by seeing them a lot of times. I had a lot of respect for the section man because I knew that if that section man didn't do his job properly, I could be in a wreck out there and possibly get killed or do a lot of damage to the cars and engines. And I don't know if others felt that way, but I did. A lot of respect for the work that the section man did. The maintainers keeping the signals going, because if they didn't keep the signals going, we couldn't move. All our work was done by signals. Red, you stopped, and green, you went. And yellow, you was cautious.
They had already pulled off the Mount Emily Lumber Company line by the time you started this.
No, it was running when I first hired out. They'd make a turnaround to call the Hill Guard logger. You'd call it an extra crew to go up to Hill Guard, take the empties, flats up, and the Mount Emily Lumber Company train would come down to Hill Guard and push their loads out on the Y, and then you'd pick them up and they'd reach in and take the empties and go back up to Mount Emily.
When did that Y cross the highway there, Wade?
Yes, it crossed the highway. The tail of the Y would go across the highway because that's where they...
Where exactly?
Right there at Five Points.
Five Points Creek?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Couldn't remember just for sure, and I had.
Well, they got it all covered up with the curve on the freeway. Now, It came in and crossed the river. And
that Y, did that extend up the Grand Round River there, or did it...
Just out to the river.
Out to the river.
Yeah.
When you went out on a run, how many hours can an engineer run before he has to stop the train and be replaced?
Well, when I first hired out, you could work 16 hours, and then you had to have 12 hours rest. And then they changed it in later years to you could work 12 hours and have 10 hours rest. But if you tie up short 5 minutes off of that 12 hours, make it 11:55 and go back out 8 hours.
Oh.
Otherwise you had to have a full 10 hours rest.
Did you many times go right up to the limit of the time?
Many times. Go dead at Ontario going east, and they'd have to come pick us up, take us into Napa.
Well, I remember when you were running a helper engine, sometimes you'd go clear over past Baker there.
Oh yeah, lots of times you'd go down to Durkee and hook into a train and help it back. Or I went down to Lyme. You couldn't go into Huntington, because if you went into Huntington back, they had helpers out of Huntington. Then, but if you run out of a helper crew out of LeGrand, well, you could go down to Lyme and hook into a train and come back. If you went into Huntington, then it'd have to tie you up and run a Huntington crew out. Then,
In the early days, there was a regular helper station to Tallahassee and then to Camellia West.
Yes. Yep, there was.
Was that still running when you?
No, they were, when I hired out, they had done away with the Tallahassee and the Meacham, or the Camellia helper station, and they run them all out of La Grande. They had a helper in Huntington, but none anywhere else. And we would, going west, we'd run down to Reese and Pendleton and help trains back to La Grande.
But you really, after your later years, liked to run east from La Grande to Nampa.
Oh, yes.
And that was an assigned area. If you signed up to go east, that's where you went. If you signed up to go west, then you went from La Grande to Hinkle.
Yeah, when I was on the... When you was on the pool freight, boy, you either run from La Grande to Hinkle or you worked from La Grande to Napa or Huntington. Before they started working into Napa, we was all our board run out of La Grande, and if they wanted to train east, and it was your turn, you went east. If they wanted to train west, and it was your turn, you went west. We intermingled and went each direction. But when they went to Napa, they had to bring over a half of the crews on the east end were Idaho crews, and they come out of Glen's Ferry and they moved to Napa. So then they couldn't run from La Grande to Hinkle, so we split the board and run La Grande to Hinkle, or you run from La Grande to Napa, and you're intermingled.
But there was just about as half as many jobs as there had been running east in Napa.
Yes. Yep, that's true. But I like the east end. You got a better run. You made better money. You didn't have to work. A lot of the crews on the west end, you'd have to work 10 or 12 hours every trip over and that much back. And many a time, if you caught a fast train, you could 5 hours and you could be in Napa. Or if you caught a slow one, you could be over there 10 hours, 12 hours getting there. But
the engines became a lot more comfortable to work in as time went on, compared to when you first went to work.
Yes, when I first went to work, they still had steam engines. They wasn't on most of the runs. They used them most of the time in helper service. But they were, I've heard a lot of guys down through the years say, oh, the good old times of the steam engine. Well, I don't recall of any good time on a steam engine, either froze in the wintertime or cooked in the summertime. One side would be cooking and the other side would be freezing. And it just much different. You had to have a crew on each engine on a steam engine. On a diesel, you could hook up five or six units together and all run by the same engineer. Then pull more freight. Because we've got, like I said earlier, they'd run most of your trains out here at least a mile to half a mile, mile and a half, or sometimes 2 miles long. They extended a lot of passing tracks, made them longer, and they still, while I was still working, they still had passing tracks, or trains that wouldn't fit in some of the passing tracks.
And what were some of the sizes of some of the engines when you first went to work?
They were much smaller than what they are now. You had a lot of 100s and 400s, and now you're up to the 6900s and 7000s.
I've heard about a 9000 Indian engine that they had down at Huntington, but it wouldn't go around the curves up in this area.
Well, that was a steam engine. Yeah, they had some of those, what they called the big boys, that come in, and they wouldn't go around the curves. when we first hired out with diesel engines, freight engines we had, would have two traction motors under each hand, and now you have three and four traction motors under each hand. Then they developed, I'd say 20 years ago, they developed a huge engine called, it was a 6900 series, and it had two diesel engines on the same chassis, back to back. And they had four traction motors under each hand, and they were long. They worked up here, but they was mainly for a high speed. They wasn't really that efficient on the mountain. But the Union Pacific had a policy that if they bought something, they worked it where in the hell ever they wanted to work it. They told them way at the beginning not to mix 100 series, 200 series, 400 series, 500 series engines, that they work better in their own series. And some railroads welded them together so that if you shut down, if you had a three-unit set, any part of that set, it was you couldn't disconnect them and hook them onto another engine. A Union Pacific would not do that. They would run I've worked with a 200 series and a 400 series, a 500 series, all in the same units. And their horsepower were different. The 400s, back way back at the beginning, were a very powerful engine. A 300 or 500 series engine on each side of them would work. I mean, they would spin trying to keep up with those 400s. They would just a different series altogether. But the Union Pacific made it work. They would not set a four-unit set out because one engine had a little problem. They'd just unhook it and hook another one on in this place and go ahead and run.
Do you ever envision that they'll run all the way through Le Grand and do away with Le Grand as a division point?
They could do it now if the railroad wanted to put the time and money into it. My feeling is that as long as they run the big, long, heavy trains and they don't have sufficient enough passing tracks, why, no, they won't. But if they would double track the mountain, where you wouldn't have to go into a passing track and wait for a train to come up the hill from the other side, and sit in there 30 minutes or an hour waiting for a train, they could run from Napa to Hinkle. But I don't think that you're going to see that, because that's going to cost a tremendous amount of money to double track the mountain.
In a way, you might say that saves Le Grand, because there's quite a large payroll that comes into Le Grand.
Payroll.
People don't realize that they notice where the roundhouse used to be and the number of employees that were there, but there's still an awful lot of money made right here by the railroaders.
Yeah, you had different situations on the railroad. You had the roundhouse and you had the backtrack. I can remember in 47 and 48 when I worked, and even after I hired out as a fireman and would hustle engines in and out of the roundhouse, there was a tremendous amount of men, like 300 men working, combined working the roundhouse and the back shop. And now there is nothing. You can't even tell where the back shop or the roundhouse was. You had, at one time, I know of, they had 20 helper crews out of Le Grand. They had 15 to 20 at Camila, and there isn't anything at Camila. They used to have a roundhouse at Camila, turntable at Camila. Nothing up there anymore. You don't have any helper crews. They used to have five or six helper crews at Huntington, and there's nothing. They go through Huntington like it's not even there. So the railroad has changed tremendously. It's not the same railroad. I don't know, it's just back then it was a railroad and you enjoyed it.
Well, there's something fascinating about a railroad and a big engine and pulling a large train.
Oh yeah, I've never, all the years I worked on the railroad, you go along the highway and wave at the car and they'll wave back. Or they'd honk their horn and wave at you first. There's always something that fascinated them. I asked John if it was feasible to put anything on the end of this tape that I felt earlier should have been on the front of this tape. What I was referring to, that my dad hired out on the railroad as a yard fireman in the fall of 1923 and was promoted to yard engineer in 1928, the year I was born. I hired out on the railroad in the summer of 1953 and was promoted to engineer in the summer of 1966. You can tell there was only 5 years difference between my dad's hiring out and his becoming an engineer, and there was 13 years difference between my hiring out and becoming an engineer, and I explained it. 1950, they consolidated the yard fireman and the road fireman. Prior to that, you either hired out as a yard fireman or you hired out as a road fireman. And your being an engineer was which branch you were on, whether you was a yard engineer or a road fireman. In 1950, they consolidated the road and the yard fireman, but it was 1964, I think 63 or 64, when they consolidated the engineers from the yard and the road. But they used everything hinged on your fireman's date. You couldn't promote one man ahead of another man because of his date. But so consequently, they made it retroactive. So every road engineer and every yard engineer got a firing date as of 1950. So the road men got a yard firing date as 1950, and the yard engineers got a road date as 1950. So all of us that hired out after 1950 fell in behind those gentlemen instead of them falling in from their date in 1964. They went up back to 1950. So that set us all back a little bit too.
Made a few more people to compete against.
Make more people. You had to retire or quit before you got to move up. One thing that to me was unique, I did fire for my dad, but you have initials in your last name for your, you had stamps that you had initials in your last name and a P number for your, you stamped on all your time slips. That's how you got paid. My dad's initials was T.H. Boer, P number 1028. And 30 years later, my initials was T.W. Boer, P.O. 29. One number difference in 30 years. But of course, all of the numbers were taken in alphabetically.
Wasn't it fantastic when payday was, if you'll give the dates, when you went down to get your pay at the freight house?
Yeah, when we hired out, they had the old freight house down there about where the old hotel was built.
Washington and Chestnut. Or Jefferson,
Jefferson and Chestnut.
Excuse me.
At the west end of the depot. And I knew guys that worked in there. They knew me all my life when I was a little kid. When I went to get my check, I had to give them my Social Security number every time before they'd give me my check. Clem Thatcher, which knew me when I was born, would not give me my check until I give him my Social Security number. Therefore, I learned that Social Security number. And I can still repeat it to you. And then they quit doing that, and those gentlemen retired, and the freight house was torn down, and they moved everything into the depot, and those guys wasn't so particular. They just give you your check. And then the great thing had happened, a direct deposit come along, and I just had it, the railroad company deposit the check in my bank account, not having to cash it every day. But I thought that was quite fascinating to me, that my dad's number and my number, after 30 years difference in hiring out, was one number off. But the railroad never mixed it up. I never got any part of his check, or he never got any part of my check. And my nephew hired out after I did, and he worked on the railroad and was a fireman and an engineer, and he fired for my dad quite a few years, numerous years. And then I had an uncle on my mother's side that was a hostler for the Union Pacific down around Las Vegas, one siding either way from Las Vegas. And back those days, you had hostlers that worked for the railroad that were not firemen.
And hostlers did what?
Hostlers moved the engines in and out of the roundhouse and spotted it for fuel and such as that. And then before I hired out, they did away with the what they called hostlers, and they went on to become a fireman, give them a date to become a fireman. And they had hostler helpers. Now, we never had to touch fuel hose or water or anything. The hostler helpers did all of that. All we did is move the engines. If you was a hostler, you run the engine, and if you was a helper, you threw the switches to move the engines from one track to another, like a brakeman in the yard. But I fired for John Mulligan here in LeGrand for several years when I had enough seniority. That you had what was the day job. You could work 5 days a week, 8 hours a day, as long as you could hold the job, somebody didn't bump you off. You had regular hours for those. But if you went to the extra board or out on the pool freight job, you didn't have regular hours. When they called you, you went.
A lot of times you worked with a particular engineer when you were a fireman.
Yeah, I did. First fire job I got with Doug Wilson. And then I went to work with Bob McClay, which I worked for 2 or 3 years with Bob McClay. And then I went to work for Ted Beam and worked with Ted Beam for 2 or 3 years, 4 years, until I got promoted. And you worked off didn't have a regular. I didn't have a regular man then because I worked off the extra board, or else I was out running off the extra board myself. Sometimes after you were promoted and you was on a regular job, firing job, and they run out of extra engineers, they just reach out and tell you you was going to go to work as an engineer. You go to work as an engineer and come back and go back on your firing job. But they were good engineers, and then, like I said earlier, they were some that were scoundrels. But all in all, you love to work with the good ones, and you didn't particularly care to work with the others.
I appreciate it. There's one thing I didn't ask you when you were in high school. Did the upperclassmen ever harass you at any time?
Well, they tried, but I outrun them.
What did they do when they were?
Well, they never did catch me, but they would. I knew of other people that they would take them out to Hot Lake or take them out in the valley and take their clothes off and their shoes off and make them walk home. But most of the time they didn't want to get out of their car, and they'd come up along beside you in the car, and I could dodge down the alley or to behind somebody's house, get away from them. Then I just didn't prowl around at night when them guys was out. Just growing up in the east end of town, you walked, and I didn't get uptown much.
It was about a mile uptown, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, it was a good mile. You walked to high school, walked to junior high, and walked to high school, or rode your bike. They didn't have school buses. The only school bus they had was the varsity bus that took football and basketball teams to different cities to play ball.
How many were in your family?
I had 5 brothers and sisters, myself 6. I had 3 deceased at birth, so they would have been 9 altogether.
But that was how many brothers and how many sisters?
Well, it would have been 5 sisters, 3 brothers. Mm-hmm. One's living.
And where did you stand in the family?
I was the 4th one. The middle. Yeah, I had 3 older sisters, and then myself. One deceased brother would have been older than I was. And then I had a sister younger that lived, and one younger that passed away, and one brother younger that passed away, and then one brother younger living.
Places that you remember when you were a kid that you used to eat, did you ever have hamburgers in at the Log Cabin Grocery out there?
Log Cabin Grocery, you bet. Best ice cream in town.
And the Shake Switch shop downtown, where you get a hamburger and milkshake for 35 cents?
In high school, when we got into high school, you couldn't eat lunch with the grade school kids, so we'd take money to go down, walk down on Main Street to the ice cream shop and have sandwich, milkshake. Then they had a little store across the street off of 4th Street that would make hot dogs and hamburgers, and we'd eat there sometimes. Yeah, that Log Cabin Grocery out there where the laundromat is now, there, corner of 18th and 20th. I remember Harvey Smith built that and run it for years and years and years. Good place. Grocery store and a sandwich shop. Mm-hmm. Ice cream. Milkshakes.
Did your family take many vacations when you were a kid?
Well, not too many. Not till I was older in years we went to. On the middle, early 40s, we took a vacation and went to Missouri one time.
Did you go by car or
by rail? By your train. Yeah, we went by
everybody train. Had a pass on the train, so.
Yeah, everyone that worked for the railroad had a pass. My dad was an engineer at that time, of course, so he had if you worked, I think, 5 years, you got a pass from the family. Everyone's name was on it. You could travel on the Union Pacific for free. His mother made sandwiches and lunch stuff and put it in a separate suitcase so we could eat on the train. couldn't afford the dining car. And I could see why in later years. Dining car is expensive.
Kind of elegant, you might say, in those days.
The passenger trains was elegant. I thought that was one of the biggest, saddest things they ever did, is take the passenger trains off. A streamliner was an absolute elegant way to travel. If the railroads had the passenger train business back today, they could make a profit. Amtrak can't make a profit, never will be able to make a profit, because too much is management and overhead. Of course, they've got to pay the railroad so much for the right to travel on their track, but again, it's bureaucracy. It's the government involved with Amtrak. But they used to have 4 passenger trains a day each way in and out of La Grande.
Carried the mail. Railroad Express Company.
Yeah. UPS wouldn't be a UPS if they had the Railroad Express Company back.
And that was the way to send
packages. That was the way to send packages and mail. They had a post office box on each end of the depot. If you wanted to go east, you put it in the east end. If you wanted to go west, you put it in the west end. Of course, every time the mail train come to town going east, they managed to get off and go open that mailbox. There was a just go down?
Yeah.
Or just that?
Both of them go down.
Yes, there was a slot on the side of the mail car. If you happened to be at the depot when that train came in and you wanted the mail to go the direction it was going, you could put it inside of the mail car. And they had the Railway Express cars on the train, and they collected lots of mail, the freight house, that's what it was for, was to handle freight that came in off of those trains. Mm-hmm. And you take it to the west end of the depot was for the Railway Express. And you could take it there and they'd weigh it out, like at the post office, and tell you how much it cost you, and they would put it on the train and ship it to Portland or Boise or back east, wherever you wanted it to go.
They even delivered cars by box cars, and they were unloaded there at the freight house on the ramp.
On the ramp. That's when they, back then all cars were shipped in freight cars. And they'd double deck them in there. Then they come out with auto racks that could haul, that were longer, and they could haul more cars, double deck it.
At first they didn't have sides on them, but they had a number of them damaged. People shot at them as the train went by and things.
Throw rocks at them.
They had to
roll rocks off the viaducts on them. They had to cover them up.
Very interesting times. When you were a kid, did you ever take the branch and go up fishing at Looking Glass?
No, never did. I have when I was firing, and even had my engineer run up there. You pick a guy up, take him up there, let him off, pick him up when you come back, or the next. Back when I first hired out, you'd go up the branch, you went up and back the same day. By a steam engine. They had a little old steam engine. Walt Parker was the engineer. And you go up and back the same day. Now those guys moved. And then when they went to diesel and they put 2 crews up there. You go up one day, lay over, come back the next, and meet the other guy going up wherever it was convenient. We stayed at the hotel. There was an old hotel up there at Joseph we stayed in, and sometimes they had a couple of outfit cars, that the crews would stay in. And then when I was up there as an engineer, we stayed at the motel. Joseph. That was quite a little walk to go in there in the middle of the night, snow a couple of feet deep, walk from there up to Joseph. That was a good mile or so to walk up there to the motel. By that time, there generally wasn't anything open to get anything to eat. So we'd stop at Enterprise on the way up and eat our dinner meal. And there's a place open for breakfast every morning, and we'd eat our breakfast there at Joseph. Come back. Sometimes we'd stop a little hour for lunch or piece of pie or something, and then come on our own. But those were the good old days.